Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar. Moving the company this hour, Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Adam, weird week for the Predators. And none of it being their fault. I mean, it just kind of is what it is. But a weird week for the Predators. They play Monday night. I thought they played okay. They play Monday night. They're getting ready to play Tuesday night. The game gets postponed. Now they're flying to Dallas. They're going to take on the Dallas Stars, who have not played a game yet because of their own COVID issues. And while we've seen this with every sport, including the Titans having their situation, it just sets up for a very weird week.
Yeah. Fortunately, it appears that the Predators avoided catastrophe in terms of contracting COVID-19 from the Carolina Hurricanes. It is believed that no Predators players have tested positive for COVID-19. The only player on the NHL's COVID-related absence list continues to be Mikael Granlund, but that's for quarantine-related purposes. The Hurricanes had four players who dressed in the game on Monday appear on that COVID-19 absence list yesterday. And to be clear, just because you appear on that list does not mean you have COVID-19. Mm-hmm. It could be contact tracing. It could be awaiting confirmation on the test, etc. But the NHL announced today that their next two games, which were against the Panthers on Thursday and Saturday, have been postponed. Their practice facilities have been closed, effective immediately. So the Hurricanes are the first team in season, during the regular season, to have an issue. Of course, you mentioned the Dallas Stars. Their issue popped up in training camp. And when they play the Predators, at least they're scheduled to play the Predators on Friday, that'll be their season opener after missing the first week of the season.
Okay, so I want to start with this question for you, which is, can we definitively say, yes, it's been three games, but can we definitively say that the 2021 Predators are going to be okay, better than we thought, and that they look like they're living up to their preseason billing of what they were selling to us that they were going to be?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, three games in, it's hard to make too many declarative statements. But as we talked about last week, you know, they sold us. They really tried to sell us in the offseason and during training camp that they were a tougher team. And I think you did see that in the first three games, especially in the two games against Columbus. The play I continue to isolate is the play that led to Boone Jenner's goal on opening night. It was a misplay of the puck by Dante Fabbro near center ice. Boone Jenner goes in on the breakaway, scores. Blue Jackets go up 1-0. Last year, that same thing happened. You could already start to write your game stories about how the Predators could not come back from that early deficit. I mean, to put it into perspective, they've won both of their wins this season have come after trailing first. They also trailed first against Carolina and lost. They only won eight games last year out of a possible 32 when giving up the first goal. So they're already doing fairly well in that regard. So I think in terms of the, are they going to be quote-unquote tougher to play against? I think so far they have lived up to that billing. So yes, I do think in that regard they're playing better than maybe we expected them to.
Where are they going to score from?
That's the question.
When I watch, and I'm with you, they're better. They are clearly better, in my opinion. I mean, what I hold it to is I don't even hold it to last season. Mm-hmm. Like the season they had, I'm holding it to the Arizona series.
Okay.
And to your point, you know, they came out buzzing to start that series, and then they had that weird goal off of Ekman Larson's shoulder.
It was a pinball type goal.
Yeah. I mean, just a fluky goal, and then all of a sudden, heads down, same old Predators. Mm-hmm. They give up the first goal on a Dante Fabbro mistake. They come back and win the game. They give up the first goal Saturday. They come back and win the game. They give up the first goal Monday. They come back and make it a game and never really gave it up until the very, very end against Carolina on Monday night. I thought you could take away. I'm not a big moral victory guy in pro sports, but I looked at the Carolina loss, and I was like, you know, would have been nice to at least get that game into overtime and steal a point, but I'm okay with that loss. Where are they going to score from? If Philip Forsberg and Luke Cunningham don't score, they don't have any offense.
Well, So, yes, Philip Forsberg, goals in each game, that's great. He started last season scoring in each of the first four games. Luke Cunningham, two goals. over the two games against Columbus. That's good. We saw quite the explosion in offense in the third period against Columbus on Saturday. Victor Arvidsson scores a big goal to make it a game in the third period on Monday. But when that was one of the questions I had, too, coming into the season, when you look at all of the changes that were made. Sure, they're tougher, but they clearly took a step back in the offensive in the offense department. You know, one would hope that, you know, Mikael Granlund will help, though he is not a goal scorer. He's more of a facilitator, a playmaker, but he is a strong offensive player. Perhaps that helps. You know, you're hoping to get some offense out of players like Rocco Grimaldi, which you did. You got a goal from him. You got a goal from Colton Sissons. You know, the defense, you need goals from there, of course. If I'm not mistaken, the defense, has the defense scored this year?
No, I don't think so.
So, of course, the Predators always have high-scoring defensemen, so you'll need Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis in particular to get on the board there. But, yeah, I mean, that's the question is the Predators are not, I mean, despite the explosion of offense that they had on Saturday in the third period, this is not the team from a couple of years ago where they might win, you know, 6-5 or 4-3. Like, this is a team that's going to need to win games 2-1, 3-2, 2-0. Mm-hmm. So, you know, perhaps they don't, I mean, they're going to need goals, yes. But maybe the way that they're playing doesn't rely on high-octane offense to win.
So when Barry Trotz was the coach, I used to have this feeling when they would get into the playoffs that that inability to score used to always be like an issue against a really good team. They were a good defensive team where Pekka was in his prime and lighting it up. And then they'd get into a playoff series against Arizona, or they get into a playoff series against
San Jose,
or a playoff series against Vancouver,
yeah,
who had a really good team.
Yes.
And I remember just watching saying, like, the only hope was for Pekka to keep it under two goals, mm-hmm. and then maybe, like, Joel Ward could poke in a power play for you, and that's where your offense is coming from.
Right.
I don't think you can win like that. Like, yeah, you can make the playoffs like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you can win in the playoffs like
that. This team, of course, is a step up from those teams we're referring to from, like, the, you know, the early 2010s.
As far as, like, draft status and money are concerned, yes. But
yes,
as far as actual production, I mean, you can pay Ryan Johansson how much money you want. The guy has not scored this year.
Understood. But I actually think he's been pretty good so far through three games. He's been drawing a lot of penalties, or at least a couple, which has been impressive, too. But I understand your point, and that is something that, when you look at some of the off-season moves that they made, you know, there were certainly Predators fans that were hoping that the Predators would have gone out and gotten someone like Mike Hoffman or Anthony Duclair or, you know, someone who's a pure goal scorer.
Why did they not go after Hoffman when he ends up? I mean, it's like one of the things that bothers me about the Titans not re-signing Logan Ryan is he got a $1 million contract from the Giants.
Right.
Like, when you see that, it's like, okay, if you really wanted that guy back, you could have had that guy back.
Right.
And that's how I feel about Hoffman.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why that did not happen. I know the Predators at least sniffed around and were in, you know, among the teams that were interested.
But they didn't offer him a real contract because...
That I don't know, but it doesn't seem... But, you know, the fact that St. Louis was able to snag him clearly means that the Predators, if they made him an offer, it wasn't one he was going to take. But the point being, I understand why there was a desire to get a player like that in the fold. You know, perhaps... I can't speak to that precisely, but... You know, you are going to need other players to step up. For example, I thought Matt Duchene, especially on Monday, was playing like his butt was on fire. I thought he looked really good, but he needs to score. And if you can get Matt Duchene to play like that and then put some goals in, and he's been a 30-goal scorer in the NHL before, you know, that helps solve the problem. Mm-hmm. But you do need some of these other players to step up and score for sure.
So that goes back to my point, though. Which is, do you think that they will? Like, do you think it will all fall into place like a Plinko chip and it'll be fine? Or do you think that the lack of goals for, like, Johansson, he hasn't scored yet. And you're telling me, well, he's drawn some penalties. Right. That's great. But he hasn't scored yet.
Right.
And, like, Roman Josi hasn't scored yet.
Right.
And these guys haven't scored. So, like, I find that to be a problem.
No, I get what you're saying. The good news, if you're the Predators, is that despite all of that, you've still won two of your first three games. you've been able to score enough from other places. Now, the next step is to continue playing the way you have overall, but then get those players to score. Then you're setting yourself up for more success.
What about lineup changes? I know that I like the second line they have right now because, to be honest, I thought the second line that they've had since the Cup Final was soft. Turris was soft. Fiala, for whatever reason, didn't work here, and he was soft. And Craig Smith was so soft, even though he'd score some goals every now and then, he was soft. And these guys now on the second line, Hala is not soft. Cunning is not soft, and I appreciate that. And I feel like it raises Duchesne's level of play and effort and physicality, the fact that he's not playing with a bunch of toilet paper on his line.
Hmm.
That being said, like, I want to see some goals.
Right.
And I feel like Tomasino, if he ever gets into the lineup at some point, maybe he'll give him something. Tolvanen sounds like he's kind of soft but can score. Like, are the young guys going to get in there? Are they going to make some changes when they get Granlund back? Like, how's that all going to shake out to maybe help them not be soft but score some more goals?
Well, I think the logical place for Mikael Granlund to go is onto that Duchesne line because he and Duchesne were basically attached at the hip last season as line mates, so it would make sense to put them back together. And I personally would keep Cunning on that line. I've really liked the element that he has brought, and I agree that his level of play seems to have raised Duchesne's level of play, which would then bump Halla to the Sissons line with either Rocco Grimaldi or Nick Cousins, and Halla can play center too. I wonder if you might put Nick Cousins then on the fourth line. He and Brad Richardson played together in training camp, and they have the makings of a prototypical fourth line. But yeah, I mean, the quote-unquote youth movement that we were told never really materialized. In terms of players in the system with goal-scoring capability, Tolvanen, as you said, remains on the taxi squad. Philip Tomasino is in the American League, so he's not really in the mix right now. Trennan hasn't played yet, which I find to be interesting, and he can score, so maybe that's one thing that they can do. Like I said, I think when you look at the team, where it is right now and what they've done through three games, the fact that they've been able to play this way and maybe not get contributions every night from the top players on their team, you know, speaks well to what they've been able to do. Now they just need to get those players to get their points, as they are paid to do, as you say, pay what you owe.
Pay what you owe.
And then I think they'll be in good shape.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have a Preds question or a Preds thought for Adam, get it in. 615-737-1025, calls and texts. And coming up, the coach, John Hines. I am an equal opportunity credit giver and rear-end ripper. And we'll get to John Hines next. 615-737-1025. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Adam Vingan is with us from The Athletic. Speaking of the Predators, Smashville Live Wednesday night. That's right. Smashville Live. Join us for tonight's edition at 6 o'clock. Tonight's guest is former Preds goalie Tomas Vokoun. The show will air every Wednesday during the Preds season from 6 to 7, and it'll feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests, and it's all virtual. You can watch the show from the comforts of your home on the ESPN 102.5 The Game Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. So join us tonight and every Wednesday, 6 to 7, this hockey season with Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. For more information, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live.
Hi, John. So it happened twice tonight where the Predators had a very prime scoring opportunity to go on off the post and transition back. The Canes were able to put it right in. What do you want this team to work on in terms of defensive transition so you get better to not allow those types of opportunities to happen?
Yeah, it's what happened on the situations where I think one of them on the two-on-one, we had, you know, Josi was in the rush. So we had a D and two forwards in the rush, and we had a forward covering. And, you know, the forwards got to stay back for the defenseman, and he got caught kind of cheating in, and then we got beat up the ice. So it's really just decision and the structure. That's what we continue to talk about, where you can't sniff offense in that situation. When the D-man's involved, you got to be back.
John Hines just telling it how it is. Predators head coach Adam Vingan is with us here on Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. So I am an equal opportunity rear-end ripper and credit giver, Adam. I would like to say that I am the most fair commentator that I know.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
I mean, would you disagree?
You can give it and you can take it. So I'll defer to you on this.
I think I'm a very fair commentator. I didn't mean that I'm a very nice commentator. I think I'm a very fair commentator.
You give praise when it's due and you give criticism when it's necessary.
Yes. And I lit up John Hines last year when he first got here, and like 3 weeks in, I saw no improvement. I saw a team on the ice that didn't give a you-know-what, and I just was apoplectic and went off on everything over there, including the coach. Mm-hmm. I know it's only three games, but you got to give John Hines a lot of credit right now. And here's why you got to give John Hines, in my opinion, why you got to give John Hines a lot of credit.
All right.
Because everything he said they were going to be, they are. They play tougher than they did last year. They get down in games and they don't hang their head, which was the biggest problem he ran into when he first got here. They fight hard for the puck. The star players are playing hard. It's obvious they're playing hard. It seems, and I'm not there in the locker room, and you're not there in the locker room like normal, and you can't be in the locker room, but it seems like the players are having a better time than they did last year. So it wasn't like before the season, John Hines was selling a Stanley Cup contender. It wasn't that John Hines was selling us they were going to be the best team in the league, or they were going to score five goals a game, or they were going to be. I feel like everything that he told us he wanted them to be, they are right now. And I have to give John Hines a lot of credit for that.
Well, to your first point, when John Hines got here, he inherited a broken team. Like, I remember being in the dressing room at Cotton Bowl Stadium after they lost the Winter Classic. And I remember Pecorine saying, "We're in trouble right now." And a veteran group should never say that, especially at that point of the season. And, of course, we know what happened 5 days later. It was going to take more than the time that John Hines had to fix what was broken on this team. And, you know, he ran into many challenges that were out of his control. The pause that you know, broke up the season for 4 months, and then a longer than anticipated off season. But he used that time to put in the necessary work, and now I feel like you're finally seeing the fruits of that labor, to your point. You know, you are now seeing what appears to be a mentally tougher team. And that was really the Predators were, when over these past few years of disappointment, they've gotten in their own way. You know, it's, you know, sometimes, yeah, they've run into good teams, but a lot of times they've shot themselves in the foot. They got in their own way, in their own heads. And now you don't really seem to see that anymore. And Matt Duchene, I believe, was speaking to that effect this morning when he was on with Robbie and Rex Road, which I recommend you go listen to if you haven't, not you, but your listeners. But
why don't I have to listen to it?
Well, I thought you probably might have already listened to it. Have you listened to it?
Can I lie and say yes?
Sure.
I listen to 4 hours every day at Robbie and Rex Road, and I listen to 4 hours of Darren Donovan Chase, and then I do my show.
Yes. Well, everybody should go listen to the interview. I thought it was quite enlightening. Anyway, you know, I think John Hines deserves a lot of credit. He spoke about what the changes that this team was going to need to make, and caution that it wasn't going to be an overnight thing. It may have taken a calendar year, but he seems to have done it. So yes, I agree. He deserves praise for that.
I think Hines is doing a good job this year, but this, he has me giving him credit.
Yes.
So when things, if something goes wrong and I think he's the reason to be mad, that gives me the right to be mad about it. But right now, I think that they are what they set out to be.
Yes.
And I know it sounds crazy. Like, I try to, again, like I said, I try to be a fair commentator. Mm-hmm. I wonder if my own personal relationship with Peter Laviolette kind of maybe clouded my feelings about him at the end as coach. Obviously, Peter's a good coach. And, like, I think the Washington Capitals are going to win with him as coach. And then probably after 5 years, he'll probably get fired there too. But I didn't feel necessarily like Peter was the problem. And then I feel like the more I dig into this, the more it kind of sounds like Peter was the problem, or the players weren't having fun because of Peter, and it was getting through to them on the ice. How can Peter have that kind of effect on those guys?
I cannot say definitively that Peter Laviolette was the problem, but he did not help. Let's just put it that way. And I understand, and I remember at the time when we first discussed the hiring of John Hines that you weren't particularly thrilled about it. And I know one reason why is you look at Peter's resume versus John Hines' resume. You know, Peter has taken three separate teams to the Stanley Cup final. He's won a championship. John Hines, in his four-plus years with the Devils, made it to the playoffs once, albeit with a team that wasn't expected to do much over his time.
Right, this wasn't Mike Vrabel walking in with the Super Bowl rings.
Right. It was in terms of the accolades, it was a step down from Peter to John. But I think from what this team needed and what we've heard and what we've heard from John and what we've gotten to know about John over the past year in terms of his coaching style, his the way he deals with players, I think you've seen a level of accountability that maybe had slipped, in my opinion, solely my opinion, under the previous coaching staff. And the example I go to is, you might remember this, like in last February, less than a month into John's tenure, the team went on a Western Canadian road trip and were getting their butts kicked in Vancouver. And Ryan Johansson was on the bench, Victor Arvidsson was on the bench, Matt Duchene was on the bench, Philip Forsberg was on the bench. Peter Laviolette wouldn't have done that. John Hines, perhaps he was new and it's a little bit different, but he was able to take he expected accountability from his top players, and he wasn't afraid to do it in that situation. And I think over the course of the past year, we've seen other examples of that. I think John Hines was the right coach for this team at the right time.
615-737-1025. We got a lot of text to get to for Adam. Texter texts in and says, the reason that they're not having a youth movement is because David Poile is retiring soon, and Poile does not have the time to wait on developing players. Do you agree with that?
Well, what's the saying about GMs sometimes, that when they make a big trade, like think about the GM that just made the trade. I guess it was Sean Marks, right? The Nets GM that just made the trade for James Harden. Sure. And he traded away four first-round draft picks and four draft pick swaps. So basically, they don't own any draft picks for close to the next decade, perhaps, or like worse position. And Sean Marks might say to himself, well, maybe by the time this all comes about, I won't be here. So it's not necessarily my problem that I'm giving away all of these draft picks. I'm trying to win right now with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and James Harden. So, would I blame David Poile? I'm not saying this is how he's thinking at all, but would I blame him if that any part of that crept into his mind? No, because that's where he is at this stage of his career. But I don't think that's the reason why he decided not to put young players.
He wouldn't have drafted a goalie in the first round and sent him overseas for a couple of years,
right,
if he was only worried about his tenure. And
I agree.
Floyd's always told me that there's two things to do. You can either do your job to keep your job or do your job to do your job.
Yes.
And I see David as the kind of guy who does his
job. Would think that he would have drafted a forward who could have immediately played this season.
Right. Traded the pick or, something like that.
That's a good point for sure.
615-737-1025. We'll get to more of your texts on the Predators plus the lightning round. We have very quick questions for Adam. We'll get his thoughts on those. That is coming up next. Stillman and Company right here. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESP at 102.5 The Game.
They look like they have a better attitude of mental toughness, being able to deal with adversity.
I feel the same way. And like you say, Forsberg took a penalty. They score a power play goal. His first shift back on the after they score, he scores. That type of situation. They got a power play goal. We matched it with a power play goal in the third period. Unfortunately for us, it's three straight games where the visiting team has scored the first goal. So, I'd like that scenario to change and see if we could get the first goal, be a little bit of a front runner. I think, for sure our game would be better suited to have the lead than for coming from behind. But the fact that we three straight games have come from behind in all those games, two to win and one to tie it up in the third period, and have plenty of chances to tie it up again after they took the lead. That bodes is a good sign, I believe, for the toughness and the mentality of our team this year, say, as you said, versus last year.
That was David Poile. I could not agree more. doing his little weekly visit on Darren Donick and Chase. Adam Finkin from The Athletic is with us. Nate texts the text line, which is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I think if the Predators play either game against the Stars, it will be a telling game. While the team has had to battle back from deficits, they haven't had to go through any adversity like they are now with not playing last night because of the COVID issues. Last year's adversity plagued the team, but we will soon see how it is handled now. Your thoughts?
Well, it will be interesting just because the Stars have not played this season. Their game Friday against the Predators will be their first game of the season. It is a good opportunity for the Predators to, you know, shake off the disappointment of not playing last night. And I think it helps that they're playing the Stars, quite frankly. No love lost between those two teams. So there should be no lack of motivation for multiple reasons when it comes to Friday's game.
So I'm not really worried about Friday's game.
I'm not.
David
so
Poyle said
it.
That the Stars are totally clear. Like, yeah. So, and you're flying to them. It's not like they have to fly to you.
Right.
So Poyle said that they're clear. You're clear.
You're the first team. You're the first visiting team in the hotel that everyone is going to be staying at. So it's extra clean, probably.
Yeah. None of that. I have no qualms about that game. And I don't look at Friday's game as some kind of big test. I do think that it does interrupt things to have not played yesterday.
Yes.
And to not have like a Thursday game. You know, the Tuesday day off Thursday.
Two full days of practice. Like they got to practice today. They'll get to practice tomorrow. I think that helps.
How much do you think practice matters in that sport?
I do think it does.
Because once they usually get to like January 1st in a normal year, they just barely practice.
Right. I think because of the fact that they only had a week and a half of training camp, I think practice at this time of the season is important. And they had a longer than expected practice today because they didn't play yesterday, and they'll be able to practice tomorrow before they leave. So I do think you're right. I think over time, over the course of a full 82-game season, practice doesn't matter as much. But I think in this situation, this early in the season, I do think it still matters.
Texter asks, what player does Adam see the most that he'd like to see more out of so far through three games?
What player would I like to see more out of? Well, I you know what?
I have my answer.
Well, why don't you go with yours first?
Roman Josi.
I was going to say Roman Josi, or I'd like to see, even though I think he's really stood out, I'd like to see Matt Duchene pop a couple. That was going to be my other answer. But Roman Josi, certainly. I mean, the guy won the Norris Trophy last year. He's an elite defenseman. You'd like to see more from him on the score sheet. I think it will happen, of course. I would say Roman 1 and Matt Duchene 2, just from in terms of getting points on the board.
And from getting paid the most. I feel like that is also the other side of that is when you get paid the most, the expectations on you are the highest.
Yeah, so now Roman Josi is being paid the most. So there you go.
Okay, I'm going to fire through the lightning round. So I'm going to give you a question.
Okay.
And then you talk, and then Ian will hit a buzzer or a bell. I'm sorry, Ian, I'm springing this on you. Ian will hit a buzzer or a bell. And that will, then we go right to the next question.
How many seconds do I have?
You have as long as you want until Ian hits the bell.
All right.
So
Ian has to tell me how much time I have.
Now, Ian, you just hit the buzzer whenever you feel like you want to hit it.
Okay, I'll go every 30 seconds. That's
fine. Don't do that to him. Don't
30
do
seconds
that to
is
him.
Good.
Okay, fine. Through three games, what are your thoughts on the division as compared to what they were coming into the season?
They're about what I expected. Tampa looks good. Carolina looks good. Chicago looks bad. Detroit looks slightly less bad, but still bad.
They beat Carolina.
They did beat Carolina. Columbus, what we saw, they seem to, you know, they bounced back against Detroit. But, I mean, Florida's barely played because Dallas and Carolina have had to postpone games. So I think my expectations of the division have played out as I have expected them to through the first week of the season, and Dallas hasn't played yet.
You don't want to use any more of your time?
No. Oh, there it is.
Okay. Second question in the lightning round is, which game do you think the Predators played their best overall game and why?
I honestly think they played their best overall game against Carolina. Even though
they lost 4-2.
Even though they lost. I think they were able to find ways to win against Columbus. I actually thought they did a better job of controlling play at various points against the Hurricanes. They just couldn't get the goals, as we previously discussed. And I think the players felt that way, too. I think Philip Forsberg said something to the effect of, you don't play your best and you win two games. You play what you think is your best game and you lose. That's the way hockey is. So I would actually say Carolina was probably, at least in my opinion, their best game despite losing.
Okay. What is their biggest weakness as a team?
Where you asked the question earlier, where are the goals going to come from outside of your usual suspects? If Philip Forsberg is not scoring, if Roman Josi isn't scoring, if Luke Cunningham isn't scoring, Matt Duchene, Victor Arvidsson, where are the goals going to come from? Can we expect Colton Sissons to score some more? Rocco Grimaldi? Can we get?
Can't you say that about every team, though? Like, if their top six forwards and their number one defenseman don't score, how are they going to score?
Probably. But so far, we haven't seen enough of it. So, I mean, I'm just repeating what you said earlier. That would be my question. I think they've looked better defensively. I think the goaltending's been good. I'm looking at the offense. Ding.
How do you think John Hines, I shouldn't say how, do you think John Hines has handled the goalie situation correctly? Yes or no, and why or why not?
Yes, because UC Soros has started more games. I like the fact that despite the fact that there was a day in between games, Thursday and Saturday, that UC started both games. I would have expected UC to start yesterday if there were games, so that would have been three of the first four starts. That's what I would have expected. That's what I would have liked. I mean, 75% is probably not feasible over the entire season, but UC Soros should be getting the majority of the starts. So, yes, I agree with how John Hines has handled the goalies through three games.
Even though he's kind of lied about it, right?
What do you mean?
Well, like, he went into the training camp saying, you know, hey, it's empty slate. We, you know, one of these two guys is going to win the job. But he really gave it to Soros. And then last year down the stretch, Soros was clearly the starting goalie. And he wouldn't say that. And now he still won't say it. And yet every single action he takes shows you that UC Soros is the number one goalie. Like, I understand the idea of kissing the rings. I just watched an entire press conference where the University of Tennessee fired Philip Fulmer's coach for cheating, and all they did was praise Philip Fulmer. So I understand the idea of guy's a legend, let's not, you know, publicly shame him. But at the same point, like, don't you think Pekka's man enough to handle the reality of the situation?
Oh, yeah,
because
for sure.
Hines has made it obvious, and this is me, I think Hines has made it obvious that he is convinced that Soros is the number one goalie and Pekka is very clearly the number two. And then Hines gets in a press conference and he starts talking about 1A and 1B.
Right. I think it's important, and I asked John about this the other day, I think it's important that UC gets the majority of the starts, this is my personal opinion, just because of where he is in his career. You know, we know what Pekka is by now. We don't know how many years Pekka has left. UC Soros needs to prove, at least in the short term, that he can be Pekka's replacement. So if I were the Predators, I would be giving as many starts as I can to UC, you know, as the schedule permits, so that if Pekka were to retire at the end of the season, you know that you at least have a starting goaltender in your midst, and you don't have to worry about going and getting one. So that's my opinion. So, I mean, I can't speak to whether or not John has, quote-unquote, lied, but I do get what you're saying in regards to perhaps softening the message a little bit, considering the other goalie that they're talking about.
Sure, and maybe John Hines has privately told those guys, like, look, like UC is the starting guy, and Pekka is the backup goalie, and he just doesn't want to publicly say it.
Right.
Because then you could probably construe the words however you'd want.
But it's obvious if you're watching.
Yes, it is obvious that he has never entertained the idea of Pekka Rinne as the starting goalie. I think since he's gotten here. Maybe when he first got here he gave Pekka a chance, but really, like, 3 weeks in, Soros has been his starting goalie.
Yes.
And Soros was his starting goalie down the stretch last year.
And in the playoffs.
Then the pause. Then in the playoffs. Then when Soros gave him the ability to take him out, he didn't.
Right.
Which I would have done in the Arizona series because Soros wasn't playing that well. And now this season, I mean, I think he definitely went out of his way because the way it was going to shake out no matter what was that one goalie was going to play three games and the other goalie was going to play one game. Mm-hmm. And the way it shook out was he went with Soros in back-to-back nights against Columbus. I thought that was very telling. I didn't even think they'd do Pekka like that, and they did Pekka.
I mean,
like
John
that.
Said when I asked him about it that, you know, their number one priority right now is winning hockey games. So if it's UC Soros that helps them win, then they're going to play UC. If Pekka gets on a roll and he's playing better than UC, it's going to be Pekka.
See, I don't believe that.
You don't?
No. If Saros is on a roll, it's going to be Saros. If Pekka's on a roll, it's going to be Saros. Like, if Pekka had shut out Carolina the other night, I don't think Pekka starts the next night against Carolina.
Right, but it's a back-to-back. I mean, I know that it's a no-travel back-to-back situation, sure. But we know that typically goalies don't start in back-to-back situations.
Okay, if he shuts out, because it's what? It's Friday, Sunday this weekend?
Yes, Friday, Sunday.
Okay, if Pekka's not going to play.
I would expect UC on Friday.
If Pekka shut him out on Friday,
yeah,
Pekka would not play on Sunday. Because he's not the starting goalie.
I understand. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago.
The Carter Hutton
yep. situation where he had that shutout in Florida and he got a second start. And that was like the first time since he had been a member of the team that he had started consecutive games when Pekka was healthy. Like that was a big deal, you know, 3-4 years ago. Not so much anymore, of course.
I do remember when they asked they asked Peter if Hutton was the starting goalie now, and Peter was like, I'm not even going to dignify that, whatever he did. And I was like, that's so stupid. Like, you can't win in the playoffs with Carter Hutton.
Right.
And Crispy comes up to me that night and goes, I was listening to you in the car, which I shouldn't have done, but you were right, because if it hits the fan, you don't want the goalie to hate you. And I was like, that's a pretty fair point.
Crispy knows what he's talking about.
Yes, he does. So. And if you will say about Crispy, is that man has never said a bad word about Pekka Rinne and will never say a bad word about Pekka Rinne ever. Like, I think that if it were like Crispy, if you could play any Pekka, like any goalie in the history of Pekka, I remember last year during the playoffs, I was like, Crispy, should they switch goalies? And he was like, I'll leave that one to Coach Hines, ha ha, and then talked about Pekka for like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But I love Crispy. He's the man.
Yes.
Good to see you, Adam.
Always a pleasure.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Okay, coming up next, A.J. Brown has surgery on both knees and still made the Pro Bowl and put up a 1,000-yard season. Plus, Chris Sanders was so sold on Baltimore, they're out. What do we think about where the Titans go after the team that beat them got smacked by the Bills? Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, will join us next. Stillman and Company right here. We're delivered by TriStar Moving on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So yesterday, none of us knew A.J. Brown was going in for surgery on both knees. Literally going in for surgery on both knees. A.J. said on his Instagram Live, they told him to shut it down in week 2. And instead, he made the Pro Bowl. Will Compton tweeted out that A.J. Brown would attend walkthroughs this season in a wheelchair. And yet somehow, A.J. would play every Sunday. With that, we're joined by former Titans receiver Chris Sanders. Chris, you played through some injuries in your career. You played with Steve McNair and Eddie George.
Yeah.
What do you make of A.J. Brown secretly all of a sudden having to have surgery on both knees after the spectacular Pro Bowl season he put up?
Man, it just shows you the mentality of this kid. I mean, he's young, he's big, he's physical. But when your knee is hurting, your ankle's hurting, and everybody's telling you to not play, but you have the mentality to play, you're just wired different. I mean, just watching him, like every other play, he's getting hurt and then he's come out. But the reason why he comes back in the game is because he's just wired different. And there's just people that's just like that. I played with Steve McNair. I played with him for 8 years. And just watching him, you know, with his ankle, his sternum, his fingers broken, and to get back in the game, he was just a guy that he was wired different. That's exactly how A.J. Brown is.
I wonder what this means for A.J. Brown and how good he can be. Because if he put up a season, he put up with two bad knees.
Yeah.
You know, knock on wood, if he has a healthy season next year, how good could he be?
Man, he can be really, really good. I mean, you know, the first year he came into the league, you know, there's some things that he needed to prove on, you know, getting off the press and, you know, getting a guy off the spot and stacking him. And all those things we talk about as being a wide receiver. And that's what he did this year. I mean, if you look at what he did in some of the games, he absolutely took over some of the games. Look at what he did when he played against the Houston Texans. I mean, you know, where was that? Can you hear me?
Oh, okay, we got Chris.
Oh, you got me. Did you lose me?
I think I lost you for a second.
You push a mute because you don't want to hear me talk, man. I thought you loved me.
There's probably something to that, Chris.
Yeah. No, but just when we were talking about A.J. Brown, I mean, just he's becoming a complete receiver. At the beginning of his first year, we talked about can he run routes and can he get off the press, can he stack the guy and all the receiver stuff, and that's exactly what he did this year. I mean, he's made plays, he's got off the press, and he's beat some of the best corners in the league. And if you look at what he did against the Houston Texans, in our mind, we're thinking that they're going to just play it safe and go to overtime. they throw a 52-yard bomb to A.J. Brown, and it just shows you that, you know, the coaching staff doesn't just trust A.J. Brown, but you have Tannehill and that whole staff trusting that guy.
What did you make of the news today? Chris Sanders is our guest. What do you make of the news in the division right now? Phillip Rivers is retired in Indianapolis. I don't know where they plan on finding a quarterback.
I don't know.
Deshaun Watson clearly wants out in Houston.
Ooh.
And Jacksonville is going to go with Urban Meyer, who's never coached in the NFL, and Trevor Lawrence, who's never played in the NFL. I don't know how the Titans aren't the favorites and front runners for the division when you just look at the three quarterback situations in the AFC South.
I mean, it makes a big difference. I mean, if you look at a couple of years what we were in, we had a quarterback situation, and it just shows you how important a quarterback is. And now you have the Indianapolis coach. You have, you know, Rivers that retired. You got this Deshaun Watson stuff. You got all those things going on. And then you have, just like you said, the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, they don't have a quarterback. So the teams that are going to be successful in the AFC South is the team that has stability at the quarterback position. And which team has stability at the quarterback position is the Tennessee Titans. We have Tannehill. So those other teams may struggle because they don't have a quarterback if they don't find a quarterback, but it's a plus for the Tennessee Titans.
What do you make of the Watson drama in Houston?
Oh, I mean, my gosh.
He doesn't want to come back. He's mad at the owner. The owner and the GM now are trying to hire Eric Bieniemy from the Chiefs, because they think that will be what Watson wants. Maybe Watson is just leveraging his situation to get them to hire Bieniemy. Maybe he doesn't want to be there, and he will hold out because he's got the money to hold out, and he's got the money due to him that they can't bring in a quarterback, because then if he shows up, they'll be so far over the cap. They have no draft picks, and he's got a no-trade clause, so he can go wherever he wants. What do you make of all of the drama and the leverage that Deshaun Watson has on the Texans right now?
I don't think he's doing it out of spite. I just think he's frustrated. You have a quarterback that's frustrated. I mean, you get rid of one of your top receivers, and you have other two receivers. One get caught with you know, taking drugs. I'm not saying he took drugs, but he took something that he wasn't supposed to, and that was Fuller. And then you have Kenny Stills that doesn't want to be there. So what do you do as a quarterback? And so I just think that he's frustrated with that because he has no weapons to really throw to. And then, you know, you have a situation to where you want to have a head coach that you can trust, a head coach that believes in you, a head coach that is not always riding you. So now you have a situation to where you have Bieniemy is there. Why not bring a guy that's been established in the league? Why not bring a guy that's a mastermind at creating opportunities, not just for the quarterback, but creating opportunities for different guys on your offense? So if you wouldn't talk to him, if you don't want to talk to him, and I have to beg you to say, I want to be out of here for you to talk to the enemy, I just think you have a frustrated quarterback.
Well, and I wonder too, and Chris Sanders is our guest, I wonder too how much of this is that, you know, team chaplain from the Patriots that's run everybody out of town, and the owner won't fire him. And Deshaun Watson apparently told the owner on behalf of the players that they wanted to get rid of this guy, and they kept the guy, and they hired the guy wanted to be general manager, and that the owner and him pray together, and Watson is told the, like, I wonder how much of this is, I told you to do one thing and you didn't do it. And I have all the leverage here, so I'm going to use all the leverage I want. And I think some of it, too, is Watson looks at the team around him and says, get me out of here. This team's awful.
And I mean, the thing about it is if you don't have it right in leadership, if you don't have it right in the organization, how are you supposed to have it right on the field? I mean, if you look at what's happening with the Texans, the reason why they had a sour year, and I say this in a respectful way, is because you had sour ownership. You had a sour GM. You had a sour, you know, head coach. So if those guys are sour, how do you think you want these guys to perform? They're going to perform in a sour way. Look at Watson. He's sour. He's mad. He's upset because he's frustrated. You have wide receivers, Kenny Stills, that say, get me out of here. I don't want to play anymore. So when you have situations like that, and you have an organization that is not together, especially in a front office, especially as coaches, and especially as a team, how do you expect to win? You cannot win like that if you have so much sourness in your organization, and if you have so much sourness in the players. Guys are going to play terrible, and they're not going to want to play for that organization. And that's exactly how Watson is feeling, and that's why he wants to get out of here.
Chris Sanders is our guest. What did you think of the Buffalo Bills putting a smackdown on the Ravens?
I knew you was waiting for that.
As convinced as you were, Chris Sanders, convinced Man. That Baltimore was Hey. Better than Buffalo, Hey. Buffalo puts the smackdown 3 total points from the Ravens on Sunday. Hey. What did you make of
Hey.
That?
Hey, let me tell you something. Can you hear me? I never do this, but, Jared, I am so sorry. I mean, I am sorry. You was telling me how good the Buffalo Bills were. I'm like, they're okay. But when they put the smack down on Baltimore, when they were flying around, listen, I know there's some great defenses in the league, but in my opinion, what I saw last weekend, when I saw the Buffalo Bills, that is the best defense in the league that I've seen in the last 2 or 3 years.
I'm speechless.
No, I'm sorry. I mean, I can't even believe what I'm saying. I don't even like you, Jared, and I'm apologizing to you on the radio. I don't even like you. I love you, but I don't like you. But, man, you were right when I was watching this, and all I can think about was, Jared's going to crush me on the radio. Jared's talking bad about me.
I'm in his head. I'm in Chris Sanders' head.
Dude, they're good. They may beat Kansas City. That's how crazy it is.
So, with that being said, and I want to give you your thought on the games this week in a second. Mm-hmm. Do you think ultimately we'll regret the Titans choosing Tannehill over Brady? Brady, 2 weeks in a row. I feel like Tampa Bay is an okay team, but I feel like Brady puts them over the top. Tannehill could not put the Titans over the top against the Ravens. If Brady played for the Titans that game against the Ravens, I think the Titans would have won. Do you regret at all seeing what Brady's doing right now? Do you regret going Tannehill over Brady this offseason?
Not at all, because I think that, you know, I understand that Brady is a great player. I understand he's the GOAT. I understand he's a Hall of Famer, but it's got to be a good fit. I mean, I look at what Tannehill did. The reason why Tannehill was able to succeed in with the Tennessee Titans, because it was a great fit. I'm not sure that if we'd have brought Brady, I understand he's having a great year with Tampa Bay. I understand that he's having a great season, but would it have been a good fit? I just don't think so. I mean, because you got Arthur Smith, who's a young OC, you know, and it probably went his first or second year being an OC, and having Brady come in that has a lot of knowledge and, you know, has all these things and all these accolades, I don't know if they would have meshed or not. So I think that it all goes about not just looking at a whole bunch of accolades. You got to make sure it's a good fit for the team, a good fit for the system, and a good fit for the whole offense. So I'm kind of glad that we got Tannehill instead of Brady.
Okay, what do you think this weekend? Chiefs, Bills, Packers, Tampa Bay. I think it's going to be a great weekend. What do you think about these two games?
You know what? I'm going with the Bills. And the reason why I'm going with the Bills is, man, their defense is flying around. What they did to Baltimore to stop that running game, to stop Dobbins and to stop Ingram and to stop Edwards, man, they shut them jokers down. I mean, they were physical. They were flying around. So in that game, I'm going to go with the Buffalo Bills. I understand that the Kansas City Chiefs have a lot of firepower, but once you get hit in the mouth, it's totally different. And I think the Buffalo Bills are going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs.
Packers and Bucks.
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with the Packers. And the reason why I'm going with the Packers, I know we have Aaron Rodgers, you know, leading the charge. But the one thing that's keeping this Green Bay team in these games is their defense. I mean, we kept talking about last year when they lost in the NFC Championship last year. Everybody got talking about they need to revamp their defense. They're soft on defense. Man, them jokers are flying around. And then on the flip side, on the offense, you know, they kept talking about that they didn't have a running game. Man, now they have a running game with Dillons, Jones, and, you know, some other cats that can run the ball. So, man, it's going to be a good game. I'm going with the Packers in the NFC, and I'm going with the Bills in the AFC, and let's ride with that, baby.
Chris Sanders. Ian, I think I've been saying that for how many weeks now?
Oh, there you go. There you go.
I've been saying Bills, Packers for
like two months. Dude, you've been right like once out of this year.
Well, maybe once. Twice. Well, it's 23. It's an early year. That's where we are. Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, as always, joining us on the program. Chris, want you to know how much we're thinking about you. Want you to know how much we care about you. How much you mean to all of us around here, and how much every single one of us in this building is thinking about you. We appreciate you.
We appreciate you, man.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, love you guys. Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Yep, Chris Sanders joining us on the program today. Great Titan receiver, even better guy. And it takes a good man to admit how wrong they were about the Buffalo Bills. I mean, Ian, did he not just preach everything I've been saying to him specifically about the Buffalo Bills for the last 3 weeks?
I think after watching the Ravens game, it was hard for him to deny it any further.
See, that was my whole point with everybody that kept saying, "Oh, Jared, I ain't worried about Buffalo," when I was like, "Do not play Buffalo." And everybody was like, "We beat them in October. Jared will be fine." I'm like, "Don't play them. Do not play them."
No way that game goes the same way as it did in October. No way.
Oh, my God. In Buffalo, with Stephon, they'd have killed the Titans. Killed them. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Everybody's got their list. Here's my targets for the University of Tennessee coaching search. Everybody's got their list. Coming up next, there's two people you got to understand are not going to be the coach at UT. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company right here, delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.